This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mook Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mook Delivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with Mook Delivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast. Now in our sixth season, looking into the exciting happenings of Ipswich Town Football Club. My name is Mikey Pensey-Smith. This is the flagship show, and here to pick apart Paul Cook's first game in charge are two key ingredients of the Blue Monday podcast team. It's Joe Fares and David Diamond. Joe, you've passed a late fitness test after your COVID vaccination. No after effects?
No, not so far. I have sort of heard that Bill Gates is tracking every move now, so we'll see what he thinks of tonight's pod. Whether he can give us a bit more publicity through his Microsoft channel would be good.
Yeah, that would help, great, wouldn't it?
Great stuff. And Dave, there was an injection of class into the Blue Monday channel this week when you interviewed Russell Osman. How much did you enjoy that?
Yeah, loved it. Loved it as usual. Though I did pick up one critical response, I think on YouTube or Twitter, when I say, could you in the future not talk over your guests? This is so difficult. You've got so much to say. So, yeah, sorry, Mike. I mean, you obviously do this pretty much for a living. So, yeah, you probably cringed when you saw it. But no, he was brilliant. Absolutely superb. And yeah, I mean, it was just lovely to interview him pretty much 40 years ago to the day of the St Etienne game. So that was purely by chance. And it was good. And he was very good value. Some good stories in there, particularly I had to ask him the Pelé one from Escape to Victory. And that was pretty neat. Pretty good, pretty neat response there. And Bobby Moore chipped one across. Yeah, kind of. So, yeah, no, it was great.
Pretty good name drops.
He was superb. And yeah, what you don't appreciate, you know, he played all those 66 games, but he'd been ever present the season before as well. I mean, just incredible, really. Yeah, he was good chap. And a nice chat about golf as well. Ben must have been listening to the first 5 minutes of me. Oh, my God, where's this going? Are they ever going to get to talk about football? But no, good lad. That's really good.
Not, I thought it was going to end up like Tubes and Kieran Dyer. You should just playing four holes and having a chat.
yeah. No, he was good value.
Excellent. And another one of your interviewees, Dave, of course, is Pablo Caniago. Just a little plug here for Pablo's
Pablo's so superb. And how's that going down? Is it sort
That's
of smooth?
Very nice, yeah.
A bit like Pablo's front play.
Goes down very easily in the box.
Silky smooth. Better on a hot day.
Oh, yeah.
So, definitely. Yeah, usually we have a few days worth of news to catch up on the podcast, but we've done so many shows that we're almost up to date up until Saturday's game. But there's a couple of things that we haven't touched upon yet. One of them being the injury to John Nolan. He divides opinion, doesn't he, Joe? But this is so unfair on him, isn't it? Because he's been made to train with the youngsters and then he's come back and it sounds as if he's just got injured straight away.
Yeah, apparently it was the first day back training with the senior squad. So really frustrating for him, really frustrating for Paul Cook, that he can't even have a proper look at him because Nolan is one of the players whose contract runs, I think, until the end of next season. So he's someone that the manager really wanted to have a look at before the end of this season, see what to do with him, because sort of the players who are contracted for next season, he's going to need to find use for some of them. And I think he'd be a good player in a Paul Cook system. I think he's got the right sort of... He just needs... So I think there's a couple of players, especially those signed by Paul Hurst, that have really needed a manager that's sort of given them some confidence, given them the ability to play without fear. And I think Paul Cook could sort of do very well with John Nolan, but unfortunately we're not going to find out till next season.
No. So, where do you stand on it, Dave? Because I know that you quite rate John Nolan, don't you? But you're obviously frustrated by him, like most people.
Yeah, of course. Very much so. I do.
Yeah. Do you agree that he might have been decent playing alongside Flynn Downs in that 4-2-3-1?
No, I think perhaps he would. I think perhaps he would have been. And he's, you know, as I said, you know, as we all know, he's got a goal in him as well, John Nolan. You know, just a shame, real shame for him. I mean, yeah, and it is going to be his boys 2 months. Minimum they were talking about, so that effectively takes us to the end of it. Well, yeah, it does, doesn't it? I mean,
let's face it, playoffs.
Yeah, well, yeah, but he's not going to come. Let's face it, he's not going to come straight back in for that. We would think so. No, just a shame, really. And as you said, he must have been sort of rubbing his hands with glee, at, you know, getting back training with the first team. But yeah, we pick up a lot of these. We seem to be any more than any other club, but we seem to pick up a lot of these injuries in training. I don't know. It might just be purely coincidental, but yeah, yet another sort of fairly long-term injury. But there you go. Enough, you'd say enough cover in that position for sure, you'd think.
Yeah. Yeah. Although haven't seen anything of Emir Hughes in any of the training videos or anything like that.
Colt Skuse is back now, though, isn't he? Close to being back. Tristan Nydam, if he wants to play centrally, he's almost back as well.
Yeah. Tristan Nydam, Dave, makes really good shapes, doesn't he? Clips of him in training. Just he makes really good shapes.
Just a lovely, lovely football. I know Kieran Dyer always bigged him up from very, very young age, didn't he? He said he was the one out of all of them at Dizelle and Downs and that. He always really, really pushed Nydam. So, bad, terrible, terrible injury, you know. Broken ankle, ligaments, awful, awful injury. So, yeah, I mean, little clips of him I've seen in the 21 and in training, and that looks good. Just a nice footballer, isn't he? And certainly you'd think someone that can more and hold his own at that level.
I'd heard that Mick McCarthy was a huge fan of his as well. Apparently, at one point, he sort of stood him in front of the senior squad and told everyone that he was his diamond, that he was going to push on, effectively. Yeah. No pun intended with you there, Dave. Mick rated, Dyer rated, and sort of the real one that they expected to push on. But like I said, with regards to shapes, I do think a left footer always makes better shapes than a right footer.
Always. Why is that? Well, it's everything. Left-handed golfers, left-handed cricketer, tennis player, John McEnroe. Bloody hell. Yeah, they do.
One-footed, though, I find. You rarely get a left footer that's decent on both feet, I find. It is because they play one position throughout their childhood, which is now on the left, don't they? But yeah, who knows? Yeah. One for another day, that one.
Well, I think so.
One for the Shapes podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Shapes podcast coming soon.
Russell Osborne was 2-footed, let me tell you. Yeah. I certainly brought that up. Yeah.
Great stuff. So, Dave, we're all hoping that this apparent takeover happens, but a few people are a little bit apprehensive about a stranger from a foreign country coming in and taking over. So when Frank Yallop comes out to say that we couldn't be in safer hands, that must fill you with confidence, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It certainly does. I mean, obviously, since the Evans statement, which was this time last week, this time last week, the manager went, didn't he? Goodness me. So sort of perhaps a Tuesday or Wednesday, was it, where it came out with a sort of flat denial. But I think, as someone said on the pod, with non-disclosures and everything else, you know, I think you take that with a pinch of salt. And it seems to be that there's certainly some momentum gathering. And nice that someone like Frank Yallop, who's still really well-respected around the club and, a stalwart of Christ knows how many games. But, when he comes out and says that, can only be, you know, seems positive anyway.
Yeah, so Joe, he was talking to From the Ashes, which I believe is a podcast.
No idea.
Sounds
like a Phoenix Rising podcast. One, isn't it? But
yeah, I've heard that. Yeah.
Was that reassuring for you as well, Joe? I know you're not particularly apprehensive about the new owners anyway, but
But it must be quite good to hear Frank Gallup coming out and being supportive.
Yeah, someone who's worked very closely with them and knows what they're about. Ultimately, no one's going to know what they're going to be like until they get in. And it's if they do get in, that is. But it's the more you hear, the sort of the bigger the picture you build about them seems to be. And there hasn't really been much negative sort of press about them or sort of negative comment, sort of negatives from people at the clubs that they have picked up. So yeah, it's all relatively positive so far, isn't it? So hopefully if it does happen, we aren't going to be sort of regretting it in a few years' time, but ultimately something needs to change, doesn't it, at the club?
Yeah, absolutely. And Joe, before we go into the Gillingham game, I know that you keenly enjoyed Paul Cook's pre-match press conference. How much of a difference does that make to your mood going into the weekend?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because under Lambert, it just became so stale, so frustrating, but also probably became a little bit unfair on him because anything he said was just ripped to pieces by the fan base, myself included. And sort of Stuart Taylor would come out and say the same. Matt Gill, actually, I found quite interesting the couple of times he stepped up. He actually sort of gave more than one word answers, it seems, at times, where, I don't know, Lambert just was so defensive and had been for so long. Yeah. It's just like, if you asked him what his name was, he wouldn't tell you what it is by the end of it. It just became where Cook has come in straight away and he's sort of shown a sort of level of enthusiasm for the job, a sort of passion. And it's just something that's been sadly missing for a long time.
I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, Lambert towards the end, it's just so miserable listening to him. He was so dour and just flat and, yeah, with that, yeah, Joe's right. Lack of enthusiasm. It's just nice to see someone else there with a, you know, sort of chirpy Scouser type character that, you know, that just seems to give everybody a lift. Whoever came in was going to get a lift by, because Christ, you know, he was done, like, you know, as we know, games and games ago. But yeah, we'll see.
It was even last year when we were sort of postponing games for the international breaks. You can't do this, you can't do that. These players need to play 60 games. You can't play them every week. And then this season, we shouldn't be playing because of COVID. We're not doing this. We're not getting enough tests. It was all can'ts and won'ts and shouldn'ts, as opposed to actually grabbing the ball by the horns and actually trying to take advantage of an opportunity and get on with it. And that attitude must sort of give off to the players as well, when you're constantly being told that you're not good enough, you shouldn't be doing this, you can't beat them if you're missing one player and things. So I say, grab the ball by the horns.
Right, and that brings us on to Saturday's game, which we didn't really grab by the horns. We travel to Gillingham looking to extend our winning run to four matches, and unsurprisingly, Cook stuck with the same team which won those previous games, aside from Josh Harrop coming in for Alan Judge, who was at home in Ireland due to a family bereavement. So our thoughts are with Alan Judge. Very sad news about Judge, obviously, Dave, but a sensible move to stick with near enough the same team otherwise, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely, definitely. Yeah, we all send our best wishes to him. Sad time, but yeah, I think so, because, you know, three wins on the spin, albeit not that convincing against 10 men at Accrington last Tuesday. But yeah, no problem with it, really.
And Harrop getting the nod out in that position, Joe. I mean, we can obviously be a bit revisionist about it now because we've seen the match, but arguably Harrop is the most similar of the other options that we had to Judge, isn't he?
Yeah, if you're going like for like, and ultimately we seem to be playing a style where you've got, or had effectively, Chambers at right back and Bennett's is just an out-and-out winger on the right-hand side, and Chambers more defensive. And then on the left, you've got Kenlock getting up and down more, and that left side of midfielder drifting centrally, as Judge did. So to sort of keep it like for like, Harrop was the answer, unless you were able to get Idris Elmazouni back from Grimsby.
Right, and the Gillingham team had just run through it. They played with a similar formation, 4-2-3-1. Bonham in goal, Jackson right back, Cundy and Tucker, the centre-backs, Ogilvy left back, Dempsey and O'Keefe, former Ipswich Academy man, centre mid, Jordan Graham, former Ipswich, Loney playing wide right, O'Connor wide left and Lee playing in behind the big man, Oliver, who gave us problems almost from the word go. And it wasn't long before Gillingham found themselves in front, Joe, after a clumsy foul from Andre Dizel on the edge of our box.
I don't even think it was clumsy. It was just a lazy foul for me. He just drags. There was no need to make the challenge. Just drags him down. And against a team like Gillingham, you know what you're going to get from a Steve Evans side. And it's going to be a big physical side. It's going to be balls into the box. It's going to be, they're going to make it very, very difficult for you. That they're a tough team to play. And to give them a chance to put the ball in from there that early was, I don't know, criminal really for me. And then ball into the box, Toto gets to it, but he's under a lot of pressure and he doesn't really get the ball away. And then Tucker's just totally unmarked. There's no one near him. I think Norwood's the closest man to him, but he just has time to let the ball come down and just basically just levers it, and it's in the back of the net. And so yeah, here we go again.
Holy's unsighted as well, isn't it? Sort of goes through Bennett's and stuff. But again, that whole move started the move up to the free kick. We had a really good situation with Bennett's wide right. Just him up against a fullback, almost last man. So, you know, isolate the fullback, beat the fullback. And he doesn't commit. Does he? Tries a bit of skill, tries to lift it perhaps over the fullback.
He waits for him, doesn't he?
Yeah, he just gets done. And it's a great, just after that, the fullback's a brilliant switch of play. He cracks a ball about 40, 50 yards, and so it ends up with Graham, and it's a bloody stupid tackle from Dizel. As you say, Joe, he's lazy, really, absolutely stupid, because he's not, his defender's there, okay, he's, what, 20, 25 yards out, right side of the box, not really going anywhere, not over-threatening, it's just stupid foul, stupid.
Mm. I'm glad you brought up Bennett's thing, Dave, because I thought that as well. He could have just knocked the ball around him.
Or not looking past him and go, just...
Was just slow, commentators were saying that he's going to struggle with the pace. He looked quite good. It's Ogilvy, wasn't it?
Good on the ball. Yeah. Great on the ball. But very frustrating. And I remember moaning at that. And then, of course, everything just leads to the free kick after that.
Yeah. And the pattern of us struggling to deal with long balls and not getting to second balls continued. Lee hits the post with Holy stranded again soon after. But as we move into the second quarter of the game, we start to grow into it a little bit more. And on the half-hour mark, Troy Parrott comes close with a superb acrobatic effort after good play this time from Keenan Bennett.
Yeah, great play. Yeah.
Down on the right. 8 minutes later, Norwood has his first sight of goal after being played in by Harrop. He takes slightly too long, doesn't quite get himself set, and Tucker makes a superb recovery tackle. Mm. Aside from that, though, Dave, pretty dreadful first half, wasn't it?
It's awful. I mean, I don't think it's no excuses. I don't think the pitch looked a bit lively, didn't it? It was a couple of times when the ball was sort of played along the deck and someone goes to control and it's sort of bouncing up at the ankle height and stuff like that. So I don't think the pitch particularly did us any favours. But the worrying thing for me was we were second to every ball. As you said, we didn't pick up any second balls, and they was just more, and as Joe said, from an Evans team, they were just all over us and more aggressive than us, really. And they didn't look up for it. They didn't really. It was just, what worried me, the second ball, a lot of pressure on the centre halves, NCR and Wilson, and they were just landing on every second ball, which was frustrating, I think.
Mm. And Joe, do you think if this game happened a few games into Cook's tenure, would you have expected him to make changes at half time after seeing that?
Yeah, this is what I sort of said on the chat, didn't I? That he almost had to play the team that started. You couldn't really make any changes after the three wins in a row. But I think we all saw at Accrington, especially considering we were playing against 10 men, it was quite a leggy performance in the second half. And I think it probably did need freshening up a little bit, but you can see why he didn't. And then at half time, first game in charge, players he probably needed to pull off were probably Dizel and I don't know who else was there. There's a few poor performances, Harrop again. And it's like, you can't, in your first game, you can't lose the players. So it's difficult to make those big changes at half time. And he sort of left it probably a little bit longer than I'd have liked. I thought once you got to 55 minutes an hour, you could have made the change. But I think it was in a difficult position, wasn't he?
I think you made a good point, because that's precisely pretty much what Hurst done in the Exeter game, wasn't it? After that Exeter, well, it was his second game, wasn't it? Or was it first or second game? Joe's right. He had to go with that team. You make changes to that team and lose 2 or 3-1, and you're immediately on the back foot already. But only had a day or so's training with the squad, so just didn't overall, I just felt we just didn't compete yesterday.
No, and whatever Cook said at halftime didn't appear to have the desired effect, with Gillingham looking the more likely to score the second goal for much of the start of the second half. But a strong run from Teddy Bishop in the 64th minute led to a free kick from 40 yards out, Dave.
Yeah, it was pretty much the only time that Bishop landed on the ball in that position and drove forward, didn't he? Really drove. And to be fair, I think he was fouled probably further back because he sort of drove as he does between two or three players. And I think he was fouled a bit further back. So I can almost, I mean, I know Evans was apoplectic and saying, well, there wasn't much of a challenge there. I think he was touched and he went down. I think his momentum took him down. But anyway, Harrop took it. Well, pretty much well-flighted free kick. Great header from Chambers. And the sort of thing, I suppose you've got to question the keeper's position there, slightly off his line, and it just loops in, clips a bar as it goes in. But great header. And great stat from our friend Statman, where he now moves on to 19 goals level. Now, hang on, let me get it. I think with Lumeries like Craig will like this. Steve Whitten, I think, mentioned for Steve Whitten. Alan Armstrong, Mark Venus, I think he was another one. So 19 goals on the day. I think he moved into the top 10 of appearance makers as well. So yeah, great. You know, from that point of view, good day for the captain. But and you're quite right. Largely against pretty much the first 20 minutes, we run a play. I'd say pretty much we didn't really look like it, did we?
No, and almost immediately, Joe, we make a triple sub with Downs, Edwards, and Sears replacing Parrott, Bennett, and Harrop. And you're thinking from here that it's our game to win, isn't it?
Yeah, the goal sort of really struck me as a real get out of jail free card because Gillingham had been the better side, and we looked like we needed to make a change. We'd got back, and then we'd managed to get back on terms, and then make the change. And you're thinking, right, here we go, three players on, get after them, and this game's there for the taking now. But it didn't turn out that way.
It didn't. Talk us through Sears' first contribution, please, Joe, and then what followed?
Yeah, well, we'd had a decent move, I think, in the lead up to it, and we'd ended up putting a cross over, but I think it was Edwards, and he just put way too much on the cross. So Sears was the one that went to pick the ball up. Kenlock sort of goes across to support him, and rather than sort of play to Kenlock, he takes a touch, takes another touch, and then he just plays a ball to no one but them, and then we are just bang in trouble at that point. And it's a really good counter attack, and so you don't want to take anything away from them. But Downs and Wilson seem to sort of go to the same space and seem to be arguing with each other. And sort of the fullback gets away, does really well, puts a good cross in, and Toto for some reason ends up sort of on his backside on the edge of the box, and it's just swept home. And I say, there's no way you should be conceding from where you are. I say we should be looking to score from there, but I say fair play to Gillingham. They took the chance and they took it brilliantly. But
yeah,
I'd say Sears, unfortunately, was very, very much at fault for that goal.
He was. Yeah, I mean, to me, it looked like one of those passes where just as he's passed the ball, he's realised he shouldn't be passing it, or he's passing, and that's why he didn't commit to it.
Joe's right. He doesn't have much effort to get back, though, does he?
Because it's a really, really overhit cross. And he does really well. I mean, Christ, he'd be better off letting it run out of play. He does really well to retrieve it. I think perhaps it had even gone off for a throw, maybe. And instead of just laying a little ball, as Joe said, just to Kenlock, who's there, he sort of takes almost one or two unnecessary touches and almost like shovels it inside. It is very good from then. I mean, great vision from really that Dempsey plays inside and just bolts away down the wing, does he? And very good from Graham, who sort of gets his head up and slips him in. Kenlock can't make it. And Enciala just, it was, I don't know, he just sort of loses his feet. It's almost a comedy one. The ball's coming across, and he's almost gone too far, can't get back, falls over. And it is a tidy finish, to be fair. I mean, the goal itself was pretty decent, but bad one.
That pass from Sears is just one of those ones. It just takes out
everyone,
whole team,
three or four players. Yeah.
You just took out your whole team with that one pass.
Yeah, incredibly, yeah.
And then Caden Jackson comes on for Andre Dizel, who'd, as we've already mentioned, had endured a difficult afternoon, to say the least. Jackson very nearly makes an impact as he hits the post with a header. Actually looked fairly dangerous from the few set pieces that we had. But moments later, it's that man, Oliver, again doing the damage as Gillingham made sure of the points, Dave.
It's poor old Freddie again, isn't it? I think the ball, we had the ball in, I think, we've got it down our right side. And it's sort of brought inside, I think, perhaps by Downs. Sears is just inside our half. The ball's laid inside to him, and he sort of turns away. He's facing our goal. And this is just a perfect through ball for Oliver. It's just a beauty. Really well weighted. Again, Oliver's in on goal. Good from Holy. Holy's really out quickly. Blocks the first one, and then it's just comedy, isn't it? And then the second one, I think, I don't know who it is, goes to try and lift it over Holy, scuffs it to him. So he's out of his box now. Plays a fair, reasonable ball to Chambers. And then I think they get a bit lucky because Chambers hits it down the line. And Ogilvy just throws himself at it. Hell of a header. And his header just goes straight into the path, takes Chambers out of Oliver, right side. Still a lot to do, edge of the box, left side, sorry. And it's a hell of a finish, isn't it? He sort of drops his shoulder, uses sort of Nciala as a shield and just cracks it in the far corner. Again, someone criticised Holy again, but maybe you got a lot of chance with that, have you?
Yeah, it maybe would have been harsh to blame Holy, but have you ever seen an Ipswich Town goalkeeper concede three goals without diving in the whole game? He didn't. His shirt must be crisp and clean, ready for Tuesday night.
Well, I suppose if you look through the goals, the first one he hasn't got no chance with, because he's just volley, hammy, leathers it, doesn't he? And he's pretty close, isn't he? The second one, again, it goes right across, and the guy's, what, 6 yards out when he finishes it? And maybe the last one, but I think the last one, he's been clever there and he's used Nciala, and you can't legislate for that. It's hell of a finish, isn't it, really? Yeah. But I know what you mean. You'd like to see.
They hit the post as well, though, and he was stationary for that one as well.
He's a bit of a good in the first half.
To his credit, he played really well with his feet in this game. He came off his line a few times and swept up really nicely.
Where he has improved, left foot as well, because I mean, there was times last season he'd get the ball on his left foot. But no, his left foot, yeah, it's very good. So, no, he just needs to sort out his general goalkeeping diving. Yeah, good point, actually. Yeah.
So, Joe, in a way, good to have that normal Ipswich Town fan feeling on a Saturday evening. Or
I do think there was a bit of an overreaction in some quarters about the game.
Because yeah, I agree.
Ultimately, I just think that Cook was in between a rock and a hard place with what team he put out there. Like they didn't want it enough for me. They didn't seem enough desire. But Gillingham are a team that if they get on top of you, you're going to struggle to sort of pull them back, because they are big, they are strong, they're physical. There's nothing, they give you absolutely nothing, and you've got to earn the right to play against them, and we didn't. And I think, like I say, when you see sort of Andre Dizel and Teddy Bishop as a midfield two, I think they just weren't able to compete in there. So there was just too many players that didn't have a good game. I don't think other than maybe. I thought Chambers did okay. I thought James Wilson did okay. And I thought James Norwood did okay. But other than that, I don't think anyone had a good game.
Yeah.
And you can't win games if sort of eight of your players don't play well. It just doesn't happen. There's no way you can do it. And
it wasn't just not playing well, was it? Like one or two of them had stinkers.
Yeah, we didn't keep the ball very well at all. Mm-hmm. And it was just a case that we didn't get any second balls. We didn't keep the ball. It was just a bad day at the office, and you sort of... It just felt a game too far for this starting 11. You just needed some. I think we missed Alan Judge a bit with that little bit of tempo at the top of the pitch. And something I was speaking about, it's just from the early goal, it's just the lack of discipline that runs through the team does concern me over the last. So I just having a look at the stats. Last season, I think we were the third worst for yellows and reds. This season, again, we're the third worst. Mm. You got players like Andre Dizel, who's on 9 bookings, I think, this season, or 8 bookings. Gwion Edwards got 10 last year. Flynn Downs got 10. Luke Wolfenden was up around there. James Norwood's a walking yellow card. Caden Jackson's had a couple of reds. We let teams off the hook by giving away so many silly free kicks, and they're all cheap, silly, pointless free kicks where that we just let them off the hook. And like I said, when you looked at the sidelines previously with sort of Paul Lambert and then especially Stuart Taylor there, you could see that there was sort of a lack of discipline running through the management, it felt like to me. So I think that's something Paul Cook has got to get really on top of, because it costs us in games, and it cost us at the latter end of Paul Lambert's reign away at Crewe when Teddy Bishop did that silly second foul. I think Caden Jackson was a bit unlucky. He tried to control the ball.
Do you think, Joe, it might partly be, because putting Flynn Downs aside, out of those players that you've mentioned, they're all offensive attacking players. Do you think it might just be that we've maybe sometimes got too many attacking-minded players out on the pitch, and the likes of Dizel and Bishop, they may be trying to compensate for the fact that they're not particularly good off the ball with trying to be too overly zealous to their tackles.
But all Dizel's bookings are just silly ones, aren't they? They're cynical fouls. I know he had the red at Sunderland, which I thought was harsh, and I thought that was a yellow personally, but they're all ones where he's just pulling someone down with two hands when they get past him. And just, I don't know, it just almost like when you watch sort of games in like Spain and Italy, as soon as they lose the ball, they just foul them to stop a counter-attack. But it's like, we're in League One. You don't actually need to defend like that, because 9 times out of 10, they're not going to break away and score on you. And I know it was just something that struck me. I've been speaking about it with another mate for a long time. There just seems a big lack of discipline. And so I think that's something Cook just needs to get hold of. We shouldn't be getting as many yellows and reds as we do. Doesn't help anyone.
No.
The amount of fouls we give away in the final third winds me up so much. You know, the ball could be, you know, defenders sort of like shielding the ball out, and you say, don't touch him. You know, he's got to put it out for a throw. He's got to, you know, he's got to, you know, it's up to him. He's got to play the ball. The amount of fouls, cheap fouls we give away there, let alone in our half. But that is, Joe's right. You know, it immediately just relieves the pressure on the other side, and the ball comes straight back. Just, yeah. And it probably is. It's just ill discipline.
Okay, that brings us neatly onto the Twitter questions. Thanks, everyone, for getting these in. We'll start with FPL Tractor. He's always very quick off the mark with a question. Does the back-to-back nature of the schedule mean we'll have to be patient with Paul Cook's training methods, as he won't get much time spent on the training ground? Start with you, Joe.
Yeah, definitely. Like I say, what you're talking about, one training session between each game at the moment, probably. If you think today we've got, obviously, Sunday would be a day off after the game, probably a training session Monday, but it's going to be no more than a bit of basic shape and a walkthrough. There's not going to be proper sessions going on, and then it's Saturday, and it's going to be like that till the end of the season. So any tweaks he's going to make are going to be little minor tweaks, just trying to get them to do little things differently and do it like that. You're not going to be able to implement much from here, and it's just a case of just trying to lift the moods, lift the sort of spirits, and just trying to keep things simple, really.
Dave, Scott Moore asks, with Cook now in place, what is the realistic expectation for the end of the season? I think a lot of people were maybe getting a little bit carried away.
I mean, you know, I read a lot of stuff last week, and they're saying, yes, you know, after the, you know, result in Accrington and Cook's first game, you know, leading up to Cook's first game, people were talking top two. Well, yeah, I think we need a degree of realism there. Look, we're 2 points off. I think we're still just 2 points off the playoffs here, behind Portsmouth now, with a game in hand, for goodness sake. So look, it's very much still on. But as Joe's quite rightly said, it's going to be very difficult for Cook between now and the end of the season to implement great changes, you know, great changes to the team. So it will be minor tweaks, and a lot of it will be obviously realised in game time, because, you know, coming off yesterday, as you said, it's only going to be a light session tomorrow, maybe working on shape and things like that. So, yeah, you know, yes, top six, certainly. Why isn't top six realistic? But, we certainly need to show a bit more fight, certainly, than we did yesterday.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I think you could see a few things even yesterday that he was trying to do in regards to sort of playing the ball into the front men, sort of on the ground, into their feet. I think Holy was sort of playing higher up the pitch, sort of trying to sweep up a bit more. And I say that this seemed a very obvious sort of ploy to try and look for Chambers sort of to win headers. I know that we've been doing that early in the season, Chambers to win headers in the sort of in front of the halfway line and try and attack from there. So there were a few little tweaks you could see that he was trying to do.
Okay. Dave Gore asks, Joe, it feels like we're going back in time a little bit here. When do Lancaster and Dobra get a look in?
I don't really see why Lancaster isn't at the moment, full stop. I know he hasn't been sort of back to his best when he's been back from his injury this year, but he's contributed. He's got a couple of goals, a couple of assists. He seems to make things happen in the... And a lot of times he's played in quite a deep midfield role as well, almost like an 8 rather than a 10 even. And I don't really see what Keenan Bennett is adding that Jack Lancaster couldn't be at the moment. I know he's got that pace and he gets us up the pitch quickly. And obviously that isn't to be sniffed at, but his final ball is so hit or miss. Like I've never seen someone overhit crosses as much as he does. And I don't mean as many times. I mean how far he overhits them. There are times when he's crossing the ball and there's one player in the box and it's going out for a throw-in. Yeah. Almost on the full. He just absolutely levers the ball as hard as he can.
He needs a gap wedge and he's hitting a 7-iron, doesn't he?
I think he's hitting a driver. But it's just, I don't know, it just seems, I like some of the stuff he's done, but ultimately he's had a run of sort of 5 or 6 starts. And I don't think he's done anywhere near enough to sort of say, yeah, he's nailed down a position in the team now, where I'd rather Jack Lancaster get that run of 5 or 6 games. He's our player. He's on a long-term contract and to see if he can make something happen.
Yeah. And potentially Lancaster might take the place of Freddie Sears if Cook is reactionary to how it went. Sindre Eliasson, I believe is from Norway, asks, can you see Sears recovering from this? His confidence must be absolutely dried out, Dave.
Yeah, it's going to be shot, I think. after that. And, you know, Freddie, I think I saw someone on Twitter last night saying that perhaps this is it. I assume, Joe, his contract's up at the end of the season, is it? I'm assuming.
I think so. I can say for definite, though. I think it is.
So, you know, and someone probably had it spot on, said that, you know, he'll probably return to, you know, maybe make a return up the A12 to, down the A12 to Cole U, which wouldn't be beyond the realms, I guess. And good luck to him if he does. But no, I really think, bless him, he's been a pretty good servant. I think that his time has run with us, I think, now.
Yeah, obviously we can't, like, not all of the blame is at Sears' door for how it went. Both times when he lost the ball, a lot happened in between that and the goals happening. But it's just what is he really offering us? He doesn't seem to have a particularly good touch. He's having to play not in his natural position because he doesn't really have the pace to play up front anymore. He can't hold the ball up as a one-up.
He was at his best, wasn't he?
He doesn't seem to score enough goals. The goals that he does score just seem to be rebounds that he's followed up.
He was season quite well, really, and him and Ward seemed like they're having a good little partnership down there. But he's lost that yard of pace, hasn't he, since his injury? And it's understandable because when Paul Lambert first came into the club, I thought Freddie was absolutely flying at that time. He scored a few goals coming off that left hand side, a really smart footballer, really sharp, making good runs. But he just seems to have, I don't know, just lost that yard of pace. And when you're a player of his size, when you lose that sort of physical attribute, you're going to struggle.
Yeah. Bad injury, wasn't it? I mean, he was out for a season. Was he bad injury?
To me, he looks like he's tried to bulk out to try and offer something else, and I don't think he carries that weight particularly well.
No, he's taken something away from his overall play, hasn't it? I think.
Mullet asks, has Matt Gill overworked our best 11 just as Cook has taken charge? Or did he just get a flavour of why we are so far off promotion, Joe?
I don't think we're that far off, to be honest. I know people are talking about how bad it was yesterday, and it was bad. But when your manager's coming into a new squad, these things do happen. Like when Mick McCarthy came in, as organised as he made us, we lost our, was it 5-0, 6-0? We lost to Palace in his second or third game. And it was just, Palace and Leicester.
Palace and Leicester. 5-0 at Palace, yeah.
We got absolutely thumped, didn't we?
Yeah. You're going to get bad games, because it's a squad that's been underperforming for a long time, and it's a squad that lacks confidence and lacks belief in itself, and that's not a switch. You can try and get things going again, but ultimately you've just got to try your best, and you're going to have some bad days. It's just trying to make sure you don't have too many of those bad days, isn't it? And we've got a tough game on Tuesday, but I don't see why we'd go into that game with anything to fear.
Okay, are you as optimistic as that, Dave?
Yeah, I think so. Like I said, you know, 2 points off the playoffs, game in hand on Portsmouth. All right, there's teams around us just below us still. But yeah, why not? Why not? Hopefully the new manager bounce will start on Tuesday.
And you look at, I know we're jumping around a bit here, but when you look at the fixture list between now and the end of the season, after Tuesday, I think we've got to play Portsmouth, and that's it. Because you look, who are the top teams? Lincoln, well, we'd have played them twice Tuesday. Hull, we played them twice.
Sunderland,
we played them twice.
Doncaster,
we played twice. And Portsmouth, we've still got to play a second time. We've still got to play AFC Wimbledon twice. We've still got to play Fleetwood twice. We've got to play every team down at the bottom end of the league. Oxford's another one who we have played twice, who are a decent side. We've got a real big opportunity here with the running we've got, that if we can string some wins together, we'll be in the playoffs.
Cool. Okay. Matty Niblett wants to have a little nibble at Andre Dizel, Dave. He says, got to give Cook a chance to actually settle. Seen questions over Chambers and Parrott, who for me have been consistent players recently. When is there going to be questions over Dizel? He can beat a man, but that's it. Exposed defensively today. Do you think he's had his best run in the side of his whole career, hasn't he?
Virtually ever present, hasn't he?
Could you see that coming to an end?
Yes, perhaps so. Perhaps
you expect Jack Downs will come back in, won't he? So it's going to be.
You would think so. It'd be interesting. The starting 11 on Tuesday will be interesting. Yeah, I think there may be more than one tweak there on Tuesday. I mean, do we know is Judge likely to be back for that? Do we know or?
I don't know whether he did go back to Ireland or whether he was missing the game because of the bereavement.
Okay.
But
I would not be surprised if one of Dizel or Bishop doesn't start on Tuesday. Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. Dizel is that sort of player. When he's on, he's just a lovely player, lovely footballer, well balanced, you know, picking passes, pinging balls around the corner. When he's not quite on it and he's losing possession and he makes clumsy fouls like he did yesterday leading up to the first goal, I think he sort of sticks out really, because he's not one of these players blessed with explosive pace that can, you know, just beat players at will. He's not like that. So it wouldn't surprise me perhaps if Downs came in for one or t'other on Tuesday.
Yeah, just on that, Joe, are you expecting lots of changes on Tuesday or just one or two?
Maybe three or four, I'd say. Personally, when you look at it, like I say, you've got Luke Wolfenden, who's you're going to need to get back into the team at some point. Personally, for me, I thought Toto didn't have a good game, but then he had a really good game Tuesday, so sort of unfair to drop him. But you've got to remember that Toto and James Wilson, they hadn't played. I think Toto hadn't played for 5 weeks, and James Wilson hadn't played for 3 months, and they've come in and they've played 90 minutes five times in a row in effectively sort of, what is it, like 16 days they've had to play. Five times 90 minutes after not playing for a long time. Keenan Bennett's another one like that. So I'd expect, well, I wouldn't say I expect one of the centre-backs to change, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if one of the centre-backs changes. I don't think Keenan Bennett will start another game. I'm pretty sure Flynn Downs will come into the middle. He looked like a player with a bit between his teeth when he came on yesterday. Has James Norwood got another start? Now I think he's going to have to try. Maybe Troy Parrott might drop out. So I don't think he had his best game on Saturday. Again, it's another player who's come in and hadn't played a great deal of football and is just sort of put together five games in sort of 16, 17 days, and there's no letting up here now. So there's going to need to be some changes.
He's looked good in parts, hasn't he, Parrott? I thought he's, you know, he's nice touch. Yeah, again, yesterday he wasn't, I didn't think he was particularly bright. A bit unlucky with the overhead kick. Perhaps need goal, you know, scores that and he's off and running, isn't he? But yeah, I think I agree with Joe. I can see a few changes. Not mad, but yeah, a few on Tuesday. Just to freshen it up again. And if Judge is available, I assume he'll come back in.
Okay. This will excite you, Dave. We've got a question from Paul Cook's brother.
Yeah.
Jonathan Cook asks, our squad does have talent, but do we lack grit? Surely one or two players who really want to set an example with more graft, which would spread through the team so we can become a team who can grind out results when needed. Do you think we're lacking in...
That's been levelled at us for seasons, hasn't it, really? It was so, you know, really, I know this sounds ridiculous. It was such an Ipswich Town performance and result yesterday, wasn't it? All the expectation, it just was, wasn't it? All the expectation was there. You know, the last how many donkey seasons, you know, you're up for a game, right? We all sat there for a brilliant, you know, three on the spin. All right, not particularly brilliant at Accrington, but hey, that's a sign of an okay side if we can win playing badly still. And it was just such a letdown, wasn't it? And certainly, you know, I think Downs coming in, if he handles himself well, will be a plus, because he certainly will add more grit to the side. Yeah, you know, and it's right what you said, that centre mid of Bishop and Dazell, you know, when the sort of muck and bullets are flying, as you knew it would be yesterday, a bit soft, isn't it? A bit soft. Yeah. Nice, but a bit soft for me.
I did think all along that Dazell and Bishop, as lovely as it is when it's working and it's in full flow, yeah, it was never going to be a sustainable partnership.
Not when the chips are down. Not really.
I think Bishop is a lot more physical than he's sort of sometimes given credit for. Mm. But neither of those are the players that are going to grab a midfield by the scruff of the neck, are they? They're sort of play alongside someone.
Do you know?
I think Scuse would have made a big difference.
Well, what I was going to say.
There's your grit.
Yeah, grit and a bit of experience alongside one of them. You know. Yeah, I think. I mean, they'll get shot down for that. I think we missed him a bit, to be fair. I think we are, you know, fit goal skills, I know. But honestly,
in a game like that, yes.
Someone to sit there. No, but it's right, though. Just someone to sit there, get the ball. You know, he always competes, don't he? No matter what game he was having, he always competed well. Probably have. Never thought I'd say that.
Excuse is always quite good as well when the opposition are playing on the counter-attack. He'd find himself in the right position, didn't he? I don't think any of us are calling for
500 league games or whatever he's played. You know, experienced player, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think this sort of he's the sort of player where Cole Skuse's role this season, obviously without the injury, would have been a player to play these sort of games when you know you're going to get a physical bombardment from them. He's an extra player that can win some headers in your box. He's a player that's going to compete. He's going to do it. And that was the sort of game where we really missed him.
I'll tell you what, Joe, that's a good point. And the headers in centre mid, we didn't win anything yesterday. He's very good. Seldom do you ever see Cole Skuse again, no matter what sort of game he's having, lose out in centre mid to a, you know, in a head, you know, aerial challenge. So yeah, I think we missed his sort of in a game like yesterday, certainly.
And he will suit this 4-2-3-1 certainly much better than he would have done like a.
Is he, Joe? Is he training? Is he back training?
Yeah, I think he's back in full training, so I don't think he's far off.
Interesting. Okay.
I think he'll have an important role to play between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Joe, ITFC Nostalgia asks, almost a cliche, but could seventh be the ideal finishing position for us this season? Gives Cook a chance to look at the squad and get us ready for August. We're nowhere near championship level. It would be a tough season if we went up.
No, you just want to get up. You can't pick and choose when you go up. You've just got to try and get up when you can. And like I say, if we go up, all we've got to do is finish above three teams, don't you? It's not a case of we're not expecting to go up and finish mid-table. If we can go up and finish 21st and go again from there, I think any Ipswich fan would take that at the moment.
This is just speaking very, very hypothetically and just from a football fan's perspective. Do you kind of feel like it'd be better to get promoted next season, though, with a full season in League One, going to the away grounds, building the team a little bit, or are you just black and white, as soon as you can?
Then seeing us get up and get walloped going away in the championship.
yeah. Well, we'd be able to go to Wembley, wouldn't we, if we go out through the playoffs this year? They're talking about fans being able to go to games at that point for the playoffs.
Yeah, they are, aren't they?
I say it's. Yeah, I'd love to follow a promotion campaign. It's been a long time since I have done, but ultimately, for the good of the football club, you just, how to say, you can't sort of put things off at this level. You can't pick your perfect time if the opportunity is there. And this is the difference between us and Norwich over the last 20 years. Every time they've had half a sniff of something, they've grabbed with both hands and gone up. Where whenever we've had a sniff of it, we've never got anywhere. We've lost in the playoffs three times. We've messed up when we've had money. We've done this. We've gone on a brilliant run at the start of last season, falling away. Whenever they get a sniff, they take it, and we've got to.
Mentality. Those sliding doors moment. Whenever the sliding doors open for them, they walk right through, don't we? But we seem the doors seem to close in our face, don't they? Every single time. It's just,
dickhead club. Rich Woodwards asks, a brilliant milestone with a goal to boot for the skipper yesterday. Yet some can't wait to slate him. Am I alone in thinking that someone who has dedicated a huge chunk of their lives for this club, admittedly in a poor era generally, deserves far better from supporters? Now, I know where Joe Fair stands on this. You're a little bit more on the fence with Chambers the footballer, aren't you, Dave? But you agree that he deserves respect.
No, and Cook said, Cook in his post-match made reference when he was asked about that, great achievement. And he said, players his age are generally, in the side, one, because they're a good player, and two, because they've looked after themselves really well, and properly. And look, now Danasian's gone. To be fair, I thought Danasian, when he did play, when Chambers was rested, just before Christmas, I think, did okay, and I was quite surprised he was sort of let go, obviously a wage, so he's, perhaps that was the reason. And I think Joe touched on this the other way. Who's going to usurp at the moment? Who's going to usurp Chambers at right back? Only a fit Vincent Young, really. Well, Christ knows when that's going to happen, if it is going to happen this season. Let's hope he's fit anyway. But yeah, who's going to take his place at right back at the moment?
No one.
To be fair to him, he's had a hard. I don't think people who criticise him now. I think it's easy to criticise going back. Perhaps last season, season before, Championship. Perhaps he was centre half, but I think he's been probably one of our most consistent players at right back this season. I don't think you can argue with that.
Even if you look at recent week, who was better than him yesterday? Probably no one. He got the goal as well. Tuesday night at Accrington, we were bombarded in the box, and I thought the whole defence, the back four, stood up really well to that challenge. And
yeah,
I say,
he has had some poor games this season.
That's not to say you get promoted champion. Well, he's not going to be playing in. I'm sorry, he ain't going to be playing in the Championship. I can't see him playing fullback in the Championship or centre half. So this almost is not his last throws. He might not get up, but you know what I mean. He's done okay this season. I think, like I said, I think the criticism he gets is more historical more than anything, I think.
It was a conversation I was having earlier today about it, and sort of Jack Lancaster's dad came into the conversation, and he said, the influence Luke had on Jack when he moved in was immense, and I will always be grateful. Work effect, professionalism, and role model behaviour of a true professional, pure class. Young players need to earn the right to replace senior professionals.
Yep.
And I think that's what it is. That's how I brought it up on here before. I think it was in Joey Barton's book or Joey Barton podcast at one point. He was just saying, young players don't realise they need to out-train me every single day. They need to out-fight me. They need to out-work me. Right. They need to out-eat me. They need to out-run me. They've got to be better than me because I'm not giving them my shirt. And if they want my shirt, they're going to have to wrestle it from me. And I do think there's an element of that. Like, who has ever wrestled Chambers' shirt off him? No one's even really come close to getting it off him, have they? And if you look at the centre-backs last year, or Toto Nsiala, well, he was a disaster, wasn't he, last season? And players like this, and like I say, obviously, I think it had Vincent Young been sort of fit this year, it might have been a different story. But then has any of the centre-backs really played well enough to have kept him out the side if he was playing centre-back? And so I just find it a bit sad when you see the tweet about, I think there's a tweet from the club about his 80-odd game, and the comments are like, 365 too many, F off, 15 comes with defeat. And I just think, maybe sometimes the fans that do appreciate what he's done, it might be worth sticking some tweets out there to say that sometimes, just on the club stories, just to try and lose the sort of noise effectively from the sort of the people that are just out of order.
Yeah, it's a good shout, Joel. I think it might be that Luke Chambers, in a way, he's, despite all of this, he's incredibly popular amongst the fan base. Incredibly popular. And I think it might just be that there's a proportion of people that just want to desperately have that unpopular opinion and be a little bit out there by slagging off the guy that is essentially the life and soul of that dressing room and the guy that interacts with the fans after games when we've won, obviously when we're in the stadium. But I don't know. It's never gonna change. But yeah, good suggestion, Joe, to maybe encourage people, if they've got something nice to say about Chambers, say it on Twitter. Jack Saunders, Joe, I think you'll agree with this. Was there a bit of an overreaction from Ipswich fans to a classic getting turned over by a physical side when we're in transition between managers and in the back of a busy run of games? Seen a lot of need for a summer clear out. Cook's got a heck of a job on his hands stuff. Do you think it maybe was just a... Well, we've already talked about it, haven't we? It was just a day where too many players turned up and didn't play well.
Yeah. If you're not bang on it against a Steve Evans team, they'll turn you over, because they are just... Well, I'd say you saw it, and they do not give you an inch, and you've got to be on your game. And no, we weren't on our game yesterday. We didn't compete with them, and I don't think... I said after the game last Saturday, Paul Cook's got to be licking his lips when he sees the sort of squad he's got in front of him there. And I still think it's the same. I say, you just look at the sheer depth of the squad. There's so many players in there. Our bench yesterday, Caden Jackson, Luke Wolfenden, Freddie Sears, Gwion Edwards, I don't know, who else was on there?
Ward.
Stephen Sessions. Ward, and there's one other. But it's a bench, like every single one of those players would start for Gillingham yesterday. That there's some serious quality, and it's just up to the manager to get the best out of them. And I don't think there's a big clear out required. I think there will be a clear out, just because it's natural when you're a League One team, and he's going to want to bring some of his own guys in. But I say we're fine. We just need to put some decent results together, and I'm sure we will.
It is quite funny. A lot of people seem to go from saying, how can Paul Lambert be underachieving with this incredible squad of players, to as soon as a new manager comes in and we lose, they're not as good as they think they are. The players aren't very good. Yeah. Anyway, last question here. I've saved the best name to last. Maurice Claude, the three recent wins plus one loss relied heavily on a spine of Division One players, League One players, Toto, Wilson, Norwood, etc. Is this what is required for promotion? And if promotion is achieved, how many of the existing squad would survive / struggle in the Championship?
Wow. Blimey. Yeah. Well, out of the team, absolutely, you start with who played yesterday. So, you go with a keeper, fullback, Kenlock, Championship. Well, you'd certainly take him. You'd think he probably could. Right back, we said Chambers, probably not. Step too far for him if it happens. Wilson and Enciala. Well, not sure. Wilson, probably yes, I think. Yeah, you think the midfield three are going to be good enough. You know, Dizelle, Downs, Bishop, you think they're good enough. Edwards, probably. Norwood, yes. The rest, I don't know.
And the thing is that it's a valid point, and we would need a lot of new players whenever we do get to the Championship.
Of course you would.
We will need some old Championship heads in there. But hopefully training and having matches under a manager like Paul Cook will improve these players. Also the confidence that promotion breeds as well. If we get promoted, these players will be better players then than they are now.
Yes, and he knows, because he's proven, he knows what it takes to get out of that division, doesn't he? That's what pleased me most about the appointment, that he's got a track record in that division. All right. Lambert did with Norwich, but come on, he inherited a fairly decent squad there. So, yeah, you'd think we'd have more than enough. But yeah, he's already intimated that again in his post match yesterday, where he said, it's a big squad, and it's probably
too big
a squad. So it will be trimmed, for sure. It will be trimmed. a lot of players out of contract. And look, you know, promotion, yes, championship, but, you know, with that takeover comes, you'd think with the takeover comes potentially, you would hope, new investment. So who knows, you know?
Yeah, and I'd say, I think the problem is when it's sort of saying who is good enough for the championship, if we're in the championship, it's because we've won 9 or 10 of our last 15 games, and we've either or we've won 11 or 12 and we've gone up automatically, or we've won 9 or 10 and then we've won the playoffs. So if we get promoted, he's obviously got a tune out of these players that they haven't shown so far. So I don't know. I think it's just one, you just cross that bridge when you come to it. You're gonna have 10 out, 10 in. It's just how it works. You might even have 20 out and 10 in.
And hopefully we get some decent young Premier League loanees as well.
We've
got a good record of that in the past in the Championship, and so's Paul Cook.
But I bet if you look at the Rotherham squad, for example, people say, "Oh, how many of these Rotherham players are Championship class?" And it's like, well, probably very few. And I know they're in the relegation zone at the moment, but they're sort of fighting pretty hard. They got a couple of games in hand on Birmingham. They could easily stay up. Same as Coventry. When you saw that Coventry team last year, how many of those did you think, "Oh, these are Championship class players"?
Yeah.
Not many, 2 or 3, but they go up and they sort of ride a crest of a wave and go from there. Just add a bit of quality in the right areas is all you need, isn't it?
Exactly, because it's a big jump in class. It is a big jump. It really is. So I think, yeah, a bit of quality in the right areas, that's certainly what will be needed. Yeah. Going up with the current squad, wouldn't happen, wouldn't work.
Okay, but staying in League One then, I'll just quickly run us through the other results and the top of the league table. Accrington won 2-1 against Swindon. Blackpool drew 1-1 with AFC Wimbledon. Burton, Jimmy Floyd's Burton, who had looked dead and buried a few weeks ago, beat top of the table Peterborough 2-1. Doncaster bounced back from their defeat against us to win at home to Plymouth. Hull have gone top. So since we beat them, they've won 3 on the spin and they're top. So they beat Bristol Rovers 2-0. Lincoln, who we play on Tuesday, that was a big result for them. 3-0 against Crewe, who are, as we know, are half decent. The weirdest result was Northampton turning over Portsmouth 4-1. And Kenny Jackett still in the job and seemingly going to stay there. Oxford drew 0-0 with Charlton. Fleetwood won 2-0 at Shrewsbury. Sunderland looking solid now. Sunderland's, I think, I've only got their last 5 results, but they've won 4 and drawn 1. They look decent. That was against Rochdale. And another big result was Wigan winning 3-0 against Milton Keynes Dons. Big result for them. That league table, Hull are now top of the league on 62 points from 34 games. Peterborough level on points, but with 2 games in hand. Lincoln also have 2 games in hand on Hull. They're on 60 points. We play them tomorrow. Sunderland in 4th. So Sunderland are on the... So yeah, if Sunderland win their 2 games in hand, they'll move into the top 2 for sure. Then it's Doncaster, 55. Portsmouth dropped to 52. They're 3 games without a win. So we are in 8th now, below Accrington again, but just 2 points below Portsmouth with a game in hand. Won't run through the rest. Next up, as we mentioned, is 3rd place Lincoln at home. Rich will be back with a live stream on the YouTube channel for that one. Dave, I guess it's only right that you plug your Russell Osman and your Ray Crawford interviews again, isn't it?
Yeah, should. Yeah, well, Ray Crawford, I just did post Christmas, so yeah, particularly enjoyed that one. What an absolute character he is! So that's still up and running on YouTube, and yeah, like I said at the start of the show, I was fortunate enough to sit down with Russell Osman for an hour and a half last week. Fantastic, reminiscing about all things of his career and his film career, and mostly, as you can imagine, the 80-81, the 80-81 season. So that was, and also his Indian TV summarising career as well, which was interesting too. So, and a bit of golf as well thrown in. So what's not to like?
Great stuff. And yeah, can I just say, as an Ipswich fan under 30. I'll keep saying that while I still can.
Yeah.
I've never seen Russell Osman or Ray Crawford play for Ipswich, but they are brilliant watchers and listens. So any Ipswich fans, any age, do give them a watch. They are excellent, excellent in interviews. And Joe, any last words from you?
No, just to echo what you said about the interviews as well. It's just fascinating when you hear these people, and especially on sort of the Russell Osmond one, how he still has such a sort of clear love for the club. He's still following it. He knows what's going on. He's switched on to as to what's going on at the club, isn't he? And I'd say he was the under-18s manager for a bit, and I'd say that you've got to try and find roles for these people around the club, even if it's just on match days. A great talker, and seems a great guy, and I'd say let's get flying again up the leagues and try and get these people back involved.
Great stuff. And there was some other sad news in the Ipswich Town community during the week as long-term Ipswich fan. Is it Grant Cross?
Yeah, Grant Cross from South Coast. I think he's from Bournemouth. Yeah, I don't know him. I certainly know a few mutual friends that know him. Big town fan of many season standard. I'm sure I've seen him before. Away games and stuff. So yeah, very sad news.
Yeah. Okay. So I imagine that one will be the first away game of next season we're allowed back in. Will be quite a lively one for Grant's friends and family as they raise a glass in his honour.
Yeah,
I think most of them are quite lively for Grant's friends at the games when I've seen them.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll end the show there, guys. Thank you very much, and wish for whatever you like.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.